And you hadn't you rehearsed the night before?
Yeah.
You, so you'd met Tom, and he was charming.
It was great, you know. And he was great that day. But yeah. I do remember that moment of wondering, "Oh, Connor."
Yeah. Now you got to bring it.
Don't throw up.
Yeah.
In the van.
Welcome to episode 6. Today we have special guest Julianne Christie. We'll be answering some more of your fan questions, doing Star Trek trivia, and much more, of course. We are a leaf in the wind. Watch how we soar. And now for our hosts, Dominic Keating and Connor Trenier.
Ooh, leaf in the wind.
A leaf in the wind.
I love that.
Watch how we soar.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to my house again for another episode of Shuttle Pod.
Yay!
Thank you for coming in and ruining my house.
Thank you, Connor, for letting us ruin your house.
It's been really fun.
Somebody said at one point, you rent your house out for production one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and,
it.
And then you never
do it again.
Yeah. Well, listen, we are very excited to have Julianne Christie, who played Alen Azarillion, on an episode that was and has been thought of as one very important, very good, and you were a one-off at the time. And by the way, I want to say this. This is the first time I've ever seen her actual face.
Live. I know.
Yeah.
I saw plenty of you. I got you pregnant.
You did.
Yeah, he spent most of that first season in his underwear, didn't he?
I did. Yeah. You knocked
wasn't
me up.
Wasn't a bad look. No.
Well, listen, also really thankful for the fact that you have come down south of the border.
I did. Planes, trains, and automobiles yesterday.
Yeah.
I live in White Rock, BC. Yeah.
Is that just outside Vancouver?
No, it's right outside Washington. So it's right on the border there. It's the Douglas. It's the Peace Arch border.
Right. And I remember working in Vancouver and taking a train down to Seattle to visit my family and pulling into White Rock on the train and wondering why White Rock? And then you look to your left and there's a big, giant white rock.
Oh, there really is.
Yeah, it's a beautiful...
They paint it every year to make sure it's not tagged rock.
It's a beautiful...
They actually paint it white?
Keep it white. They have to.
Bless.
The hoodlums, the ocean.
I watched the episode this morning. It's a great episode. It really is. And you both are absolutely delightful in it. They call it a meet cute nowadays, don't they?
What does that mean?
Well, it's that sort of very cute scene between, two people who are sounding one another out.
With the
sex pebbles.
Right. Do you want an ice cube that, it's slightly shocking your lips.
It is purely saccharine, but you do it delightfully. And you're both absolutely wonderful in it. I noticed you had a particular walk about you, a physicality that I noticed today. Tell me about that. How did that come about? Were you a dancer?
I was a dancer. Well, I was a musical theater major.
All right.
Forever ago. Dancing was the least of my triple threats, though. Like, I would distract with acting and singing, and you weren't looking at my feet.
Right.
And then the dance instructor would say, it's your other left, if you could just use your
right, right.
Your other left.
You're doing great.
But I hold my gait. I'm a yogi.
Yeah, you've got some lovely movement.
Yeah, I'm tiny, so you want to, you need tits up, actually. You know, shoulders back. Right.
I didn't notice that particularly.
Yes,
yeah,
I think
lie.
You did.
No,
posture is important when you're tiny.
It's very true.
Yeah,
it's very
true. I lie. I say I'm 5'3" with every audition I do, and it gets me to set. The director looks at me like, "Yeah,
no, you're not.
Are you 5 feet?" And I'm like 5'2" after a stretching machine.
In my socks.
So had you worked on Star Trek prior to our episode?
I did. I was Neelix's love interest on Voyager.
That's son of a bitch.
I know. I was with Ethan first.
We're going to have a chat.
And you know what? We had more. More with Ethan Phillips than you.
We had a baby.
I had the baby because you wouldn't.
You gave the baby.
You gave the baby back.
I did give the baby back.
Do you think, because having seen it again today, do you think Zarlene knew she was impregnating Trip or wasn't sure that it might happen, it might not happen? How did you interpret that?
I think that both of them were kind of caught in the moment.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing about that episode was that it was just us sitting there getting to know each other. And it was like, how do you read my mind? Well, you like having that, don't you? I didn't feel like I was manipulating him.
No.
I felt like the two of us were in a moment and this, you know, magically, galactically, if that's a word.
On a boat.
Happened.
Oh, and I have to say, as a lifelong Star Trek fan, romantic interest on Star Trek, it never works out. But your episode is one of the rare moments in all of Star Trekdom where the romantic spark actually worked and wasn't cringy and was actually kind of sexy.
It's kind of amazing to hear. But then that other lizard that you loved was looking at me sideways. And that was intimidating.
Because I had the ladies.
I was only a guest.
Which other lizard was that?
I'm not sure.
Blaylock.
Oh, Blaylock.
Oh, shit. Blaylock. She wouldn't even say her first name.
You mean the Vulcan lizard?
So I just want
to... I love her, buddy.
It never goes away, does it, love?
Yeah, right. The three or four of you who don't know what happened in this
hilarious
episode was that we're on a boat. We're having this great connection. And there's a
because
bowl.
My ship's in trouble, so you came to save me.
Oh yeah, and
so already you're a bit of my hero.
Right.
What a ship, by the way. 1969 acid trip ship. I love that ship.
Yeah. By the way, when I got onto the ship and I'm trying to find something to eat, they had posited raw broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk about that for just a moment.
My raw broccoli.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would like to say something. So, we've all been on a lot of sets.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever eaten broccoli off a set wall?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
It was my first and only. It was my first and only.
Right.
And you think, would this ever happen again?
No. No kidding.
No.
With my scaly hands eating it.
It's a wonder you could even find it.
And my scaly hands. Who even knows where my hands had been before I fed you the Jell-O crystals?
Yeah.
He didn't care.
We'd all be dead today.
He didn't care.
You must have, you had contact lenses in. You probably couldn't see anything.
Just how handsome I was.
Yes, my contact lenses were that color.
Right.
The rust. And I love the art, by the way, but I was much more the brilliant green, you know. Yeah. Appropriate hot lizard.
Oh, yeah. What happens in the episode, just for the four or five of you who don't know, we're in a boat and we're chatting about
life
exactly. Yeah. And she offers me to put my hands in this bowl of crystal pebbles. Magic crystal pebbles. And I put my hands in and you put your hands in and then they light up. Mm-hmm. And I kind of go, oh.
You like me.
Yeah.
Isn't that
he had to adjust his suit first?
I think I went, oh, I'm pregnant.
It took a little longer.
It might have taken
that.
A little longer.
That was our foreplay.
Yeah.
And then magic just came in.
It's got some telepathic magic to it, the pebbles.
Yeah, there was a connection.
It's profit
involved.
To you as a game, isn't it? That the Zerillians play.
Up until that point, everything was about sort of just a connection. There was the sort of ice cubes that had the spark to them.
That was the nearest to water that they could get.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because I was suffering.
Yes.
I was suffering.
You were having a hard time. You should have taken the nap. The captain insisted you take a nap. That was an order.
So dehydrated.
Commander.
Yes, I was so dehydrated. And, it was a tough ride.
Because it was. I mean, you were trying to fix their manifold or whatever down in their engineering department. And it was like a sort of 1986, you know, warehouse, you know.
Captain, I'm struggling. Captain, I'm struggling.
And she's like just at home with all this shit. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Like, you're going to be fine.
When you're super conscious, you get used to that.
And so what happens, though, in that moment is that we both share this bowl and it lights up. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'm then with child.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of it to me was super consciousness, intuition. Mm. You had already been my hero. And I think you were kind of single at the time, even though you were looking at Blaylock.
That's hysterical.
I love the idea that through that consciousness and intuition and playing and getting to know each other, which is really what love is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that we created this little being.
So I wanted to come back.
The sweet side of that.
Yeah, I agree.
The broccoli was delicious.
In fact, I think that the entire episode is pretty sweet. It's kind of a lovely... So. Mm-hmm. I will confess to doing a few things, manipulating the script to sort of give me like... Trip should cry right now for no particular reason at all.
I loved I loved all your hormonal shit.
It is. I mean, well, I looked at, is it dated, some of that hormonal stuff now that we look on 20 years back? And is it a little pejorative about pregnancy and working motherhooddom? And I mean,
TV.
I know it is. It's TV. Yeah. I'm of a certain age now, and stuff that upsets people who are 20 years my junior, it doesn't upset me so much. But
well, it might be, but I really, at the point, I was told that I was the first male to be pregnant on television. I might be wrong about that, but at the moment, I thought that was true. I took
intergalactic pregnancy.
Is a very rare thing.
I thought that was the first and only that I've known of.
I really took to heart the notion that I needed to play honestly what maybe different environments and scenarios that occurred when you were pregnant as a female. And, you know, I was, you know, paddling up a river on that one and really tried to find moments that were
you did.
Real.
No, really nice. Mike Vahar did a great job with it too, the director.
He did.
Mm-hmm. He really did. Fantastic job. And there were just the right amount of close-ups when it mattered.
Mm-hmm.
Some lovely angles and the comedy that was that you got for it was really well done. It's a charming episode.
It is. And the compassion that you had for yourself being in that situation and for the little being too. It wasn't just get this out of me.
Right. Yeah.
It was what do we do and how am I feeling and all that. It was very well-rounded. Like I really enjoyed your pregnancy.
The scene in,
much more than I enjoyed mine.
The scene in the engineering when you're tinkering with the elevator lift.
Yeah.
And you know, what about a young person in here?
I made that up.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It was very beautifully done.
I was like, listen, if some short person came in
and held onto the rails here, like they would.
Yeah, as a baby.
And then that lovely guy that played the day player, who just looked at you and went, a short person, sir?
Exactly.
Shorter than Alan. Yeah.
Anyway, let's bring it up to the present day. You live in Vancouver, or in White Rock, I should say. But you're still acting? You're still working?
I am. Yeah, I'm working quite a bit. I've had a really nice run there so far. I'm up for some beautiful stuff right now. I'm not allowed to say, but hopefully there's good news.
Do you go back and forth, up and down, LA, Vancouver?
I haven't been here. I was telling Eric, I haven't been here in 4 years. I think it was right after my husband and I got married.
So you're repped in out of so Vancouver now? Or what's that story?
Straight out of Vancouver. Right. Yeah.
Where there's more work than there is here.
Yeah. And I was telling Dom too, it's like there's, I loved LA and I had a really nice run here. But the moment that you refused my baby, I had to go have a baby in
That's
real life.
That's right. I saw that in the notes. So you really did.
Yeah.
Was it inspired by that episode, as it were? Or?
It was inspired by 9/11, sadly. Right. But we were all in that bubble together.
Right.
It's like there's some really fuzzy perimeters around that time and some really beautiful open hearts and some pain going around that whole time.
So you're inspired by it. And what did that mean?
It meant that I vetted a gentleman's sperm.
To get clinical about that.
That's how the doctors say it.
Just knocked on the trailer door, honey.
You wouldn't answer. So I found other sperm, Don.
It was part of my special skills, lady. It's on the list.
It's on the CV.
Juggling, and dancing.
About exactly a year later, so September 2002, I had her a day early. I was induced, which is no fun. Do not recommend it. Don't do it. But it would be the first anniversary of 9/11. And I didn't have her born on that day. Now I realize it's just another day and we offer and we, you know, we celebrate every day and what we've learned. But at the moment, I didn't want her born on that day. So I had her induced. So September 10th, I have my baby girl.
No way.
Zoe.
Wow.
Are you a Celt? Is the red hair reddish or is it?
This is red for a character I'm working on. I'm usually a little more dirty blonde, boring blonde, mousy blonde. I don't know.
What is your heritage? What is your?
Mama is pure Irish, like your mama.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Dad's a Scot. Christy.
You're a Celt then. Yeah.
Yeah.
You look Celt. Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad was Irish.
I've played a bit.
We're all Celts here.
We're a bunch of white people.
Yeah. Say another way.
Chair. Well, I was saying earlier that I had done 23andMe a little bit ago, and my great grandmother is a Choctaw Native American, and I remember young thinking, you know, I'm gonna get me like an I've got no tattoos, by the way.
So he says
that I've got none.
So he remembers.
But at 19, I was like, I'm going to get an Irish flag. I'm going to get what I thought was I was going to be Cherokee because I thought I was Cherokee for most of my life. You know, some sort of symbol on that. Thank God I didn't do that.
Just as well.
Because actually, I'm not really any of that.
No.
You know, I'm mostly French. So I did 23andMe. And I've talked ad nauseum about being, you know, like legally a Native American. Mm-hmm. And I get this 23andMe back. And it literally says, Connor Trenier.
You're white.
You're white. And then turns out, apparently, I'm 0.5% Native American, which shocked me and made me a little embarrassed about going on and on and on about, yeah, my great grandmother was Native American.
Oh, Connor, I've been embarrassed for you for years.
Your daughter's like, does she have any aspirations to act or anything artsy?
You know, she played my daughter in a couple of films and she was phenomenal.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was wonderful. What,
as a baby or as a person?
She was. We don't need the insurance. Tennis mom. Just bring the baby. No, when she was 5 and 8. Something like that. And she was lovely. And then she became a teenager and was abducted by another kind of alien. I'm not sure what happened, but there was a couple of years of going, you wake up and I'm just asking her if she has a headache from her eyes rolling in her.
So she's 19, right?
She's 19.
My boy is 16. And really, it's monosyllabic responses to almost everything. Mm-hmm. How was your day? Good.
Fine.
Gotta go.
Yeah, exactly.
Where are you going? Slam.
Good talk.
Yeah.
Good talk.
Yeah. I feel so close to you right now.
Right.
So she decided at 15 that she didn't want to be me because she looks exactly like me and I've been an actress forever and I'm going to pull a Betty White on all of you and I'm going to do this until you don't care about me or no one does anyway, but it's like, you know what I mean? I'm going to do this forever. This is what I do. And she just decided she would rather not be her mom and not to be in that kind
of... Fair enough.
And I want you to look her up because this girl's got millions of hits on TikTok. Like, she's amazing. She's a little spiritual guru. Mm-hmm. She's beautiful, of course, because as I mentioned. And she reads tarot and crystals and makes candles and she sings like a bird. We just sang O Canada together at the hockey game a couple of Fridays ago. We are so close. She's my very best friend. But there was a couple of hard years of live together anymore. It was really devastating.
Now, when you left LA and had a baby.
Took my baby here. Hi, Mom. Can I come home? I'm 36. I have a baby.
Yeah.
I need to get out of Hollywood because I'm too in love with her and I'm afraid for her.
When you left LA, I mean, I know that, you know, we all come here to find some sort of like, you know, golden nugget for ourselves as actors and you chose to leave. Were you nervous about that? Were you wondering
because I met the baby and I fell in love like I never knew I could experience. I fell so in love.
Yeah.
And she was little and making noises, but I swear to God, this is true. She was tiny. She was maybe 10 weeks old. And she looked at me and she said, how? And I said, I have no idea. And I just realized my whole family's in Seattle. I've got 5 sisters there. You know, my dad had passed, but my mom was there and she was struggling. And I was like,
I'm suddenly interested in the conversation.
Let's go be with family. Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
So, Erica, darling, I think it's about time we had some fan questions,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, indeed. Julianne, the first one is for you.
Okay.
This is from @webnosis75 on Twitter. What was it like working with such acting legends as Eddie Murphy and James Coburn? Sorry, Dominic and Connor.
What?
Sorry, Dominic and Connor.
Oh, this isn't the Eddie Murphy show, you know.
Oh, yes, it is.
What was it like? I'm intrigued to hear some Nutty Professor stories.
I was only there for a couple of days. I played the little girl in the supermarket when he lost all his weight and he needed spandex. All spandex is what he needed.
I remember that scene.
I named her. I think I made her from Texas. I gave her like biography. But anyway.
How are you doing?
She was there briefly. And I remember
when you say little girl, I mean, what are you talking about? Are you like a teenager in this film?
I'm glad that that's the only thing you caught out of that, Dominic. I was young. I was 20.
All right. It was a while ago. You weren't a child actress then. I mean, that's really what I was coming to.
Yeah.
And then James Coburn walked in the room.
And then James Coburn came in the room. No, the security guards around Eddie Murphy were saying, please don't touch Mr. Murphy. And then Eddie Murphy was saying,
No.
Let's play. Yeah. Let's wrestle. Let's have fun. Let's improv. Let's do all these things because he's that genius. And how fun is that to be able to work with him? Right.
I bet.
But they're like, you stay your distance. I'm like, but Eddie said I can come closer. And we're both Aries.
How weird.
Like, I just found that out.
Did you have
sets are weird like that, aren't they? That sort of
people overdoing their jobs. Yeah. And you know, and it makes sense because, but did I look like I would hurt him? Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to jump on him.
What phase was Eddie in those days?
He was feeling pretty damn great.
Yeah.
And John Ailes, who played his professor in the lab, ended up being a good friend of mine as well.
I've often wondered, you know, I thought of myself that, you know, if I ever got to a point where I was doing a scene with De Niro, which I haven't, or a scene with Pacino, which I haven't.
Oh.
But if I did that,
let me tell you,
I would, you know, I would have my bona fides. I'd be there. I'd be the actor and be cool. Mm-hmm. I will say that the couple of times that I have gone on to do a scene with like a movie star,
you were with Tom.
Tom,
you know,
and I will say this. So I did a scene in American Made where I played W. Yeah,
I can see it.
He's very good at it.
I want to hear it, and now I need to watch it.
He nails it.
100%.
But I will say this, that, you know, I'd been in Atlanta for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days waiting to shoot. We go in, we rehearse. He's lovely. And I get in the van that morning, and I have a coffee with me, and I think to myself, I'm like, you going to throw up? No, you're not going to throw up.
Nervous throw up? Just like, or just, no.
No, just, I was nervous. We should just preface
this for some people listening who don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Shaking.
It's a Doug Liman movie.
Yeah.
It's about the CIA in the 80s under Reagan doing all that sort of black
and I have one
dealing.
Right. And I have
What's
one.
The film called?
It's called American Made.
And I have
one scene where I play a young George W. Bush walking into, waiting to walk in to see his dad. And Tom Cruise's character is also waiting because he's in trouble.
And he played a real person. Didn't he? Tom?
Oh, yeah.
This is a CIA black op guy.
Yeah, it's a true story.
Yeah.
And, but I remember thinking all the things I'd said about myself that, like, I don't really give a fuck who I'm talking to.
I'm not starstruck.
And then I get in the van. And I get in the van and I'm like, are you going to throw up right now? You might throw up right now.
Hadn't you rehearsed the night before?
Yeah.
So you'd met Tom and he was charming.
He was great.
You know?
He was great. And he was great that day. But I do remember that moment of wondering, oh, Connor.
Yeah, now you got to bring it.
Don't throw up in the van.
Because I also remember you telling me half of that story. Who was it? Was it the makeup or the wardrobe people when they took one look at you and went,
You're
playing W?
Yeah, no.
Oh, I guess you don't need any makeup.
Well, here's the thing.
No, I mean, they didn't see it at all.
At all. This is the thing, too,
I can see it, but I see you as the nicer white guy.
They were shuffling around in their notes going, thank you. You surely got the right guy here.
And honestly, you know, when I walked in, of course, I'm playing somebody who's alive, you know, and you don't want to come in and, like, screw the thing up. Uh-huh. And I do the first rehearsal, and one of the, you know, PAs walks up and he's like, ever played him before?
Many times.
And of course, that's a loaded question.
I'm a one-man show,
I'm amazing in my mirror.
And it's quite well known.
Sitting on the bench, and his question to me was like, it couldn't be bigger. And I was like, no. And he goes, man, you could do that at carnivals. You should do that over. And I was like, oh. I will say this. Tom Cruise is an actor and a partner.
So good at what he does.
And so good at what he does. Yeah, and he, right, you know, there were these, you know, even when we were doing the show, he was maybe doing Mission Impossibles. And there was a story that he, like, you know, had a tunnel where nobody could talk to him. Man, that dude sat in the green room,
right,
hung out with us,
right,
just chatted, was a normal guy.
Yeah.
And I will say this. One, I've always liked his movies. And two, having worked with him, I was like,
Yeah, stand up actor guy. Yeah,
you're a dude.
Actor's actor.
You're a dude.
No kidding. And look, and that's commitment, and that's Cruise's commitment.
And
to the game, to the craft, to the
kind of
profession.
Pure.
He is. He's an artist. He's a guy who's out there trying to connect with the other actor that he's with, and being real about it.
I tell you who. It was after we got cancelled, and.
It still hurts.
Just have a moment. Let's just have a little.
Should we light a fire? Who has a lighter?
There was a long time when I couldn't even say that. Steve.
Cancelled?
The two security guys we had. Do you remember Steve?
Yeah.
The older chap. I had a course to go back for an audition, I think, to Paramount, and I bumped into Steve wandering through on the way somewhere. And they, Mission Impossible 2 had taken over sets, right. 18, 9, and 8. And he was looking after Tom's trailer and blah, blah, blah. And I had a quick chat with him, and he just was like, and Steve was a really good arbiter for who's a stand-up dude.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, this guy, he's the best. It's a joy coming to work for him.
Yeah. And Tom, if you're listening, I doubt that you
sure
are.
Sure he is.
If you're listening, please come on our show.
Let me call him. I'll tell him to tune in a second.
Tom's number? Tom Cruise, if you have time, we would love to have you on the show. It might be in my house.
Or we could do it at the church.
We could do anywhere you want. Anywhere
remember
you want.
Me? Connor, the next fan question's for you.
I have one quick thing I'd like to say. If we could just let that Twitter tweeter person
Webnosis
know.
Webnosis75?
I don't know.
Webnosis.
Nor did I ever work with James Coburn. I don't
you didn't?
Think. I don't think so.
Oh.
But, there are some fuzzy years. And they were justified.
O-L-A. O-L-A.
Maybe you did. Maybe you didn't.
Actors.
All right. Question two.
Photo Kitta on Instagram says, hi, may I ask a question to Mr. Trenier about Star Trek? My question is, how weird was it to play a pregnant man and play that you have female hormones? With much love from Ida in Norway.
Well, Ida from Norway, thank you for that question. Truly, I thought about this a lot, when I had the episode to do. And I thought that, if I'm going to play a man being pregnant, I was going to, in some way, manifest what I understood as a man about being pregnant. And one of those things was, you can get yourself in trouble with this, but I had not at that time in my life, been around someone who's pregnant, but I, one, it was important to me that, there was an emotional life that was happening that could have been, out in the world, up in the air. You didn't know where you were.
Disconnected from reality.
In love. There's some extra love.
But it was important to me to find a level where it was real, where I was actually doing this. And I didn't know what that was. So I was sort of pulling things from there's emotion that happens that you can't quite control. There's maybe issues with, look, I've got a friend from grad school who his mother, when she was pregnant with him in Alabama, would pull off the side of the road and eat dirt for the iron.
Mm. Oh, that's good Lord. There's other ways. There's broccoli on the wall.
But that's very Alabamian.
But there's also all of those things. I really felt as though I had a responsibility to play a person who was pregnant.
Yeah.
Be it a man or woman.
Responsibility is the thing because you played it so well. And it's like you were protecting another being.
Yes.
You were protecting another being inside of you.
Yes.
And that's what we do. Suddenly I thought it was lovely.
Well, you step outside of yourself and you're and now.
Gave her up.
Another question.
At AGT Spooky on Twitter says, Alen and Trip are wonderful together and Trip would have made a great dad. I need to know if Alen named the baby after Trip.
Alen did not. Alen, at 17 weeks, found out that Zoe meant life, and that's what she was creating, and so she named the baby Zoe.
That is a nice name, Zoe, isn't it?
Oh, I love that. Wow.
Where's the? I forget what the derivation of Zoe is. Is it Grecian or something?
It is.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
It means life. And she has a little umlaut and all of it. Oh. And I love how it looks. And I love what it means.
That's a cool name.
And I loved what I was doing at the time. And I was creating life. And it means life. So.
Now that's my now Zoe. Life doesn't speak to you.
Tribute out to Zoe.
I will say this. I do think that there was, I'll speak for myself, the opportunity in that episode to explore something was remarkable. That particular thing, which was, you know, he's getting pregnant, or and we're
discovering. Men don't get to do that often.
No, and we're discovering each other as, you know, interspecies characters. And
I agree. That would have been a pretty lizard. I think the green was the dominant probably on that, not a white guy.
She was going to look a lot like you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that that notion, it goes back to sort of the ethos of Star Trek in general, which is, you know, the possibility and exploration of who we are as human beings and who we are as sentient beings, mm-hmm. and how we relate to one another. And I think this episode had really kind of nailed it.
Absolutely. It was, I felt that it was completely relatable and that people weren't just looking at Alen as some weird lizard, but as a being who needed help. You came in, these beings connected, and we created new life. And the beauty was, is that new life didn't have to go away. The new life was created somewhere. We brought in another host.
Right.
Yeah. There was nothing wrong with it. It was exactly. Evolution and kind of lovely.
And it was sweet.
Mm-hmm. It was sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love
it was innocent.
That until
It was innocent.
And I love that until today, Conner has never seen me as me. I've only known me as Alen.
I have never seen Julianne.
Which is her. Which is a little different.
I saw her that way. And today was the first day I saw you.
Is that right? Yeah. It really is the first time.
I mean, I actually saw your dog, your husky.
Yeah. You met Blossom.
Because you have to remember.
I remember you bringing the dog to set now.
I needed my baby with me. I was missing a family reunion because it just happened to fall that week. The one week then where I was like, you've got 2 weeks of work. I'm like, but I have a family reunion. It's like, but it's Star Trek. And I'm like, fuck family. So I brought my puppy and she hung with
me. You know, and of course you got to set, God knows, at 3:34
in the morning.
It really did.
It was 5 hours
of
very intense makeup.
Right. You know,
do you remember who
and Voyager
who did
as
it
well.
You
know,
was it a guy or a girl? Was it Brad?
It was a combination. It was a combination. It was the son and daughter-in-law
Suzanne.
Of the gurus.
Yeah, yeah, of the Westmores.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Yes, the Westmores,
All right.
Wow.
That was an amazing makeup. I mean, they did some amazing makeup. But yours in particular was
transformative.
Yeah, fantastic.
You have to remember, the Westmore family are legendary. They are
absolutely.
I mean, they go back from the beginning of Hollywood. Film.
No, they teach all your up-and-coming makeup artists.
Yeah.
They are seed. They are the seed of how to do any of this right now.
Right.
So it's really beautiful.
You look at any of these old movies and you'll see Michael Westmore's brother.
Grandfather.
Literally. Uncle.
The whole family.
Charlie, I think, if I'm not mistaken, as far back as Chaplin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, stuff. Yeah.
They
are Hollywood legends. Yeah.
They invented literally every makeup technology that existed, I think, until Michael, I think, is the last one.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he there? Is he still?
He's still around. Now. Yeah.
He's retiring.
He's retired. I don't think he comes out of. I think he's retired.
He doesn't work anymore. No.
Just generations.
Yeah.
Generations.
But I know that because his daughter has a makeup line, doesn't she? That she was setting that up as we were doing.
Yes, she does.
Before we have another question, we were talking about making friends and stuff. But I think I heard in the ether you and Phyllis became good friends with the writer on the show. Was it Phyllis or who was it? It wasn't Phyllis.
On Voyager, Raph Green wrote my episode of Voyager, and he ended up becoming one of my best friends.
Right.
And
still mates today.
I get to see him tomorrow.
Oh, really?
I'm in LA. I get to see him for the first time in 20 years. We're excited. We're going out to the Ananda Lake Shrine, Paramahansa Yogananda. And I'm lucky enough, when I moved back to Seattle, I moved back to Little Bothell, Washington, which is it's a bigger city now. But when I grew up there, it was a tiny town. And they happened to to build one of the temples there for Paramahansa Yogananda. And so my
daughter...
You're gonna
have to quickly,
what is that?
Yes, you're going to have to quickly fill me in because I'm a heathen.
I have that book. I have his book.
Is that a sandwich?
Yeah.
Becoming a Yogi. Yes, it is. And it is layered.
Oh, that book.
It's physical.
I know that book.
Well, Paramahansa Yogananda was one of the initial... Who brought yogis to America.
Yes.
And and it's just beautiful. And it's embracing all faiths. So my daughter, Zoe... got to go to a living wisdom school, and she had preschool, like a Buddhist Hindu preschool, embracing all faiths from when you're little.
Oh,
and
really?
So what do you do in preschool when you're five? You meditate, you do yoga.
Wouldn't that be something?
And these are just like beings that are like grounded and beautiful, and they see love first.
Yeah.
They see love first. I remember Zoe coming home from school one day, and she had this necklace of keys around her. And I was like, what is that? And she's like, that's how many times I got caught being kind today.
Oh my God, really?
And they would fill a necklace full of keys. And
that's pretty cool.
I mean, just like beautiful.
Very cute.
And it makes sense that her basis was that and who she is now, right? Is loving all beings and helping.
Except mom.
She loves me now.
She
loves me now.
Another question?
Actually, we're done with fan questions. We're going to move on to Trek trivia.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I'd like to call a landline friend.
Yeah.
I did two shows. Those are the ones I know.
Well, it's you three against Mark, so.
Okay, Mark wins.
He has had a track record of doing so.
What was the name of Trip's sister who was killed by the Zindi weapon?
Oof.
A, Lizzie. B, Libby. C, Mine. D, Penny.
Lizzie? Hey, Lizzie.
Yes. You've got it.
Did you hear me?
Yeah, we all heard you.
Yeah, we heard you. We heard the cheat happen. Yeah.
I just watched that episode.
Oh, you're a team. A little bit of cheating is okay.
Libby or Lizzie.
One down.
Woo!
All right.
We can confer. It's us against the machine, for crying out loud.
Question number two. Julianne, it's for you. In the episode Unexpected, what parasite does Trip bring back from the Zirillian ship? A zygote, a botfly larva, a liver fluke, or a protozoa?
I think it's A or D.
I thought A or D.
You actually come back with a
I don't think it's botfly because me out.
It was not that.
So when Phlox looks at you, does he tell you you've got a...
I have a parasite.
All right.
I've been given a parasite. That's what he's saying.
But it became a bebe.
A bebe. Exactly.
Zygote sounds you're pregnant, familiar.
So what would be the pregnant key?
I don't know. It was out of love.
Does anyone have the script?
I would go with...
What is a zygote?
What is a zygote?
I would go with D.
I'm going with D. I think it's protozoa.
I'm double D's, so I'm with you.
Oh. It's A.
God damn it, it's A.
It's A is really
inside. Oh my God, I was going for zygote. I was, and they brought me there.
What is a zygote?
I said zygote was familiar.
Mark, what's a zygote? Do you know? Do we know?
Talk to us.
It's an early fetal
right.
stage.
It was A. I did. I knew it. I was intimidated by the movie stars.
James Coburn was coming in. James Coburn was coming in soon.
Let's talk about James Coburn again. And my time with him.
Connor, for you.
Mm-hmm.
Number three. Mm-hmm. The droppings of Dr. Phlox's Altarian marsupial have what highly prized property?
So
A, they cure skin cancer. B, they contain regenerative enzymes. C, when roasted, they make excellent coffee. Or D, they delay Ponfar, the Vulcan mating urge.
Ooh.
I think B.
You are right.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, I was feeling it. I was feeling it.
Wow. Don't second guess that.
No.
Oh, all but right. Boom.
That's the third correct trivia question you've had in six episodes.
Congratulations.
I really wanted you to get it right.
That's fantastic.
Pop a balloon and see what you're having.
Exactly.
Okay, Mark, you're next. In the Enterprise episode, Cease Fire, how did Sovol describe Jonathan Archer's mediation between Vulcan and Andoria? A great asset. B, of little assistance. C, unexpectedly helpful. Or D, not overly meddlesome.
D.
Yeah.
Not overly meddlesome.
How do you know
oh,
this?
Oh, come
stuff?
On.
You did it.
How do you know? I don't even remember that.
Shame on you.
I've seen every episode of this show like 40 times.
Have you really?
Eight times.
I'm catching up.
All right, Dominic, you're next.
I haven't got to cease fire.
Are you ready?
Yes, come on then.
Okay.
He can do it.
Dominic, who created and raised the augments?
Brent Spiner.
Is it a multiple choice?
It is.
Okay.
A, Leslie Spellick. B, Taj Delittle. C, Eric Soong. Or D, Trey K.
Oh, good luck on that one.
Something shouts to me, Leslie. A.
Nope.
No.
Mark, I want to steal it.
Steal it.
Eric Soong.
Yep.
I was thinking Soong. I don't have three. I don't know why, because I have no idea.
The grandfather of Noonien Soong, the guy who built Data.
Oh. Okay. Oh. Nicely done.
Okay, number six. Julianne, this is for you. Ah-Len feeds Tucker with water in form of ice cubes. Ah-Len asks, have you had enough? Commander Charles Tripp Tucker III enjoys the experience and responds, how? Mm-hmm. A, yes. B, no. C, a man needs a lot of fluids when he's under the weather. Or D, I don't think the captain would approve.
Oh, it's C.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because it's the thing that kept us going.
That's right.
Right? So if he said no, then okay, and scene.
Right.
Yeah. Right? But this kept us going. It had my hands in his mouth. I was feeding him. I was nourishing him. And I was setting him up.
It was the first time Star Trek made me sit down on the sofa. I had to sit down at that moment. Yeah.
Do you usually watch the show standing?
Yes. Vacuuming.
Exactly. I'm busy. I'm sitting now.
That's hilarious.
Okay, Connor, right?
Yes, yes.
Connor, what was the name of the officer who was selected ahead of Archer to pilot the NX Alpha and by doing so became the first person to travel at Warp 2?
Uh-huh.
Look at him, honestly. You want to slap him so hard. Producer Mark, for those listening. Yeah.
A, D.N. Holloway. B, G.S. Swift. C, A.G. Robinson. Or D, R.L. Wright.
I think it's D.
That is incorrect.
Because you want it to be Wright.
Well, you thought the Wright brothers would be.
Swift? Mark. Robinson.
Yes, you're correct.
Ah, boo.
Okay.
They got into a fist fight in some bar in San Francisco over it.
In our show?
In your show.
Oh, wow. That was...
Was that a scene or was that talked about?
Archer and...
That was David Carradine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And David Carradine.
What sort of season does that come in? Because I probably haven't got back to that yet.
Well, I was working a lot in season 3.
That's right. He wasn't hungry anymore.
That's right.
Mark, question is for you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. In what month was the first Zindi attack on Earth? A, June. B, September. C, December. Or D, March.
September.
Wrong.
March.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit.
He got to come faster.
My birthday, yeah.
Now, what do they count as the first attack? Was that the drone thing that then...
Doesn't matter. It was March. It was March.
Winning.
Is it a tie mark or are we... who's winning?
I think with that steal, for the first time, Star Trek actors have beat me 4-3.
March.
Okay. Wow.
Right. Mark's mowing the lawn.
I will say I did not get the opportunity to steal the correct answer on the first question. So maybe we should have a
tiebreaker. Extra credit if
we should do the extra credit one.
All right.
Winner takes all.
That feels unfair for the dum dums.
Three of you.
He will not lose, will he? Come on, man.
All right. In 2 days and 2 nights, a beautiful alien woman named Kayla uses her pet Rilo to make the acquaintance of Captain Archer. What kind of non-humanoid creature does Rilo most closely resemble? Ooh.
Is it a multiple choice, yes?
Yeah.
It is.
Go with it.
Yeah, this is a bad question.
No, it's a good question. It's a very good question.
It's a question because someone's going to sing the answer named Dominic.
I just saw this episode 2 days ago.
Did you really?
Yeah. We're having this question.
Okay.
Jeez.
Well, I'm going to say it.
I know exactly what that animal is.
What kind of non-humanoid creature does Rilo most closely resemble? A, a Salusian miniature jaguar, parentheses cat. B, Mexican hairless, parentheses dog. C, two-headed macaw, parentheses parrot. Or D, bubble-eyed shabunkin, a parentheses
dog. I got in there.
Did you?
Go
ahead. It's B.
The dog.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, the hairless dog from Mexico.
That's right.
Wins the day.
That's right.
Did they save? Finally, we beat him fair and square.
Did they save the dog?
I think he just disappeared. Has with him.
Yeah. The dog disappeared about halfway through the episode, never to be seen again.
Back to Mexico.
She's sent by the she's a Tarzan spy.
Yes.
Mm. How about look at you, Dominic? SH1T. Good Lord.
Wow. Dominic has been watching every episode of Enterprise. Uh-huh.
I want to ask Julian, what are you up to now? What is your life like now? What are you doing?
My life is, I have created a sitcom.
Yay!
I have created and directed the pilot episode of a really fun new show. It's called the Vancouver Actors Guild. For short, we're called the VAG. Thank you for calling the VAG. May I help you? There's a bit of dirty wordplay, but there's also some really amazing characters. So here's the VAG. Let me just tell you boys a little bit about the VAG.
Bring the VAG. Yeah, let us know.
I figure there must be a part for a middle-aged British actor in the VAG. Well,
first of all, we know you like it.
Dominic's looking for work.
So when I moved to Vancouver, there was an actor's resource there called the Vancouver Actors Guide. And then across the top...
There is a real VAG.
It says VAG. And I was like, that's
funny. Hilarious.
And then I went to the Vancouver Art Gallery. We were looking at a possible place for my husband and I to be married. And again on the card, it's like the VAG across the top. And I was like, I want my own VAG. And so I created the Vancouver Actors Guild. And our heroine is Flo, and she dies in the first episode, and it's how we get along without Flo. Mm-hmm. And we have some interesting characters. I am Cherry Lane Updike. We have Ruby. We have Mo Bush.
Sorry, you're Cherry Lane Updike?
I am. We have Mo Bush.
Mo Bush.
We have Little Johnson and Big Johnson, who are security forces. And
I want to be Little Johnson in the VAG.
I know you do. I know. Because you always have been, right?
I walked straight into that.
You resonate. And as much as that dirty wordplay is fun, it's actually really beautiful, smart comedy. And when I got to Los Angeles, or when I left Los Angeles, I was here in kind of the sitcom world. Like, it was, there's so much sitcom here, right?
Right.
There's no sitcom in Vancouver, huh?
There wasn't, but there is now.
Right.
But there is now. And so we've got Space Force there. Actually, the Reno 911 people are putting up a great new show called Blockbuster right now, which is just being cast and in pre-production and happening. It's going to be phenomenal. The last remaining Blockbuster store. And there's room for comedy now. And so I think now is the time. So we shot the proof of concept pilot. Please go to YouTube and check out the Vancouver Actors Guild. Please check it out. Please love us, also known as the VAG.
Please like the VAG.
Please like it because it's where we all come from.
We love it.
It's where we all come from.
Well, lots of us do.
A lot of great work has come for the VAG. I'm surrounded by it. So the Vancouver Actors Guild, of course, is a revolving door of actors coming in. And it's just like SAG. But we don't want SAG in the VAG, do we? We don't. We want the...
I'm vested. I'm not sure if you don't want
it. You built to that, didn't you?
All right. So, Julian, I have this... I guess, game I play that I think I invented. Maybe I didn't.
I invited you to my game, so this is only fair.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. So you are on a deserted island. Mm-hmm. You are allowed a musician, like an artist, the Stones, Mozart.
Choice of music. Don't give any examples. You don't want to.
Okay, I got you. Okay.
You've got an author, and you have dessert. And you get all of them.
Be careful, don't say any desserts. You get all the variations of that.
Whichever dessert I
prefer.
So let's start with whatever.
What musical choice would you take with you to
Annie Lennox?
You would.
Oh.
Would you take all of Lennox,
I would.
This is your whole life.
Yep.
I always do this. I'm like, I remind people, it's like, this is forever.
My husband says,
I've sat and had a drink with Miss Lennox. How about that?
Can I touch you more?
And her daughter, funnily enough.
I bet.
Yeah. She's a very nice lady up at the Electric, the Soho House.
Goodness. Yeah. Right, there's no voice that matches it. My husband asks if I like any other music. Because I'll be gardening and she's just divas, just playing.
Really?
Diva's just playing. Well, listen to Diva and then dance around your house and listen to it today and then maybe understand.
I loved it. I loved like commitment to like your choice. So you've got Annie Lennox as
1,000%
musician, your author.
I'm going to go with Noel Coward.
Really?
Look at you.
You'd take Noel Coward, right? Right, yeah. Good for you.
I'm going to go with a little Elvira. Why? On that one. Just the beauty of the plays, the comic wit, the dry wit, and how many years we have been encapsulated in that sort of form of theater. And it's one that didn't have to go away when things became, you know, like that's not appropriate right now. That we can still absorb the time and laugh and love.
Pre-Hays Code.
Yes, Hays.
Okay, so dessert.
Lemon meringue pie.
No kidding.
Okay.
Yeah, I love it. Straight out choices. You knew you had it straight away.
But it has to be extra lemony and it has to, you know what I mean? And they're trying to do like lime meringue pie now, which I've noticed in stores. And I'm like, you bastard. What are you?
We're talking like
I'm not drinking tequila. Like
big giant meringue.
I'm drinking whiskey.
Yeah, like lemon meringue pie.
The nice thin, super thin crust, no thick crust. My mama rolled and rolled and rolled. It was homemade thin crust. You cook it first, then you put in the really tart lemon, and then you meringue it. So it's layered, and it's also like tall and pretty and just subtly burnt a little bit, right?
Forever. Okay.
I want to know yours, though.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Okay. All right, so go. So.
Well, up until recently, I was all Mozart, but I've recently heard some Chopin sonatas on the radio the other day. I thought, you know what? I could go with Chopin on a desert island.
That's so much better.
But Lennox,
that's the hard part about this game.
It's just going to be like sweeping sand.
It's your whole life.
It's a desert island.
That's all you get.
Only peace.
You get three things.
You know what? Annie's my girl. Okay.
I'm sticking with ice cream though, and all variations.
Wait,
of ice cream.
So your musician is who?
I'm going with Chopin. Okay,
your musician.
Slightly moved over to Chopin, and the author is. I like Dickens. I have to say. I mean, if I'm just sitting there reading, and I like a story. Mm-hmm. Rather than reading a play, he's going to go.
So Dickens. So then dessert.
Well, it's as I've said.
What's her name?
Numerous times.
Barbara.
Strawberry blonde.
How convenient.
Yeah, strawberry. All variations of ice cream with statins for free.
Perfect. As we get older, I've done this for years, and I've gone back and forth. Initially, music-wise, it was Zeppelin. I've gone to Chopin. And I didn't really think that this was a band that I would think that I would want to have. But it's
forever.
The Beatles.
Yeah.
The
Beatles. Well, yeah.
He's recently gone Beatles.
Yeah. The Beatles. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Beatles.
You know and
then,
what? Yeah.
And then Shakespeare.
They're giving my Annie a run for it right now, as I think. But that's okay. I'm okay.
Right. And then Shakespeare... Not so much because of his genius, but because...
You love iambic pentameter.
Because,
with my ice cream.
Yeah, because, oh my God, I love Shakespeare. Yeah. I think that if I'm doing this for my entire life, I can make Henry VI Part 1 about, I don't know, Lord so-and-so as a rock. I can be all of them the characters. And then dessert has always been ice cream. I mean, if I can have
Don't
all
have
ice
a
cream.
Flavor though. I mean, it's kind
of. Well, of course I do, but the
rum and raisin. I love rum and raisin.
I love rum raisin. Haagen-Dazs.
I have to say, Salt and Straw has this coffee.
Look at us.
Okay. You notice how all of our voices changed to like orgasm
exactly.
basically.
Exactly. Like, oh my God. It's a coffee and cashew. I'm in love.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bring on the vanilla bean, even.
Exactly.
Up well, the stones. Ladies and gentlemen.
Anyway, here we go.
That wraps us up.
That's great.
I'm also directing a play in White Rock. Not that any of you are going to come because, you know, you're in the States.
What's the play?
Beautiful play called Other Desert Cities, John Robin Bates. And it's very parallel worlds right now of what we're living in, though it takes place between the Vietnam War and 2004. It's the parallel lines. It's the Reagan era. Oh. It's the having to tell your truth and, you know, maybe having to cross, you know, drawing a line in the sand and and forcing your family to cross it or losing family.
What made you pick this play to put on?
Because of the parallel worlds that we're living right now. And it's a Pulitzer Prize drama. I don't know it.
It's admirable in such a huge way that, you know, you've left L.A. and you've gone on to move to Seattle and then Vancouver and to White Rock. And still you're able to be an artist.
Yes. Well, Vancouver, there's no...
Well, we sit here shriveling in Los Angeles in the heat.
Yeah.
Like I said, I love what you've done with the place, Connor.
Boy. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Just kidding.
No, I hear you. I hear you, and I appreciate that. But Hollywood North, I mean, there's no place like it but Hollywood. You know, I mean, everything is there. Everything is shot there.
Right.
All of it. If it's not shot here or out to Naboot... It's in Vancouver, and Vancouver is any town USA.
So. Yeah, that's true. Mm. That's true. And I will say my favorite city in North America, I said to you before, is the Couve.
Mm-hmm. It's a great city.
Vancouver is just remarkable.
There's nothing quite like English Bay, I have to say.
That's why I fell in love with Vancouver. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then when we ended up landing in White Rock, I was like, there is no need for me to go anywhere. Yeah. There's no need for me to go anywhere.
So I will say this, Julianne Christie, you are enlightening and beautiful and wonderful, and I can't thank you enough for coming here to be with us.
Yeah.
Bringing me out, guys.
Really fantastic.
It's been splendid.
Yeah, it's great to see your face for the
first
time.
It really is for the first time.
I know to actually meet you because I see a lot of you, but you don't see me.
No.
It's like the casting directors see a lot of us and we have no idea what they look like.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, here's another tape. Right. Here's another tape.
Yeah. But to have you here for us, with us to do this podcast, I really, you know, thank you so much.
It's been a brilliant time and love.